Opening the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services. It is Friday. Thank goodness it is Friday, May 11th, 2001. Public hearing on Senate Bill 5527, Department of Human Resources, the Director's Office, and hopefully today we will get through your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Bob Mink, Director of the Department of Human Services, and with me at the table is Kelly Friels from the Department of Administrative Services. And I want to talk with you again about our reorganization. I want to get very specifically into the field structure and then get into some timelines as we have been discussing. Representative Schrader, I would like to tell you that Doug Wilson is working diligently on the sort of staff and money that you want. He told me he may have that today.
Excellent. Thank you.
So I just wanted to let you know about that. And as I get into this, I hope all of you received my report that my staff person did on the dumpster. I'm calling it the dumpster debacle. There's going to be more to come yet on that, but yeah. I gave you that report.
We dealt with another dumpster issue during full ways and means this morning.
Oh.
Sad one.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed that. If we could go into this document that I handed out last time, and inside, if we go to page 13, it's going to look something like this, and at the top of it, it says transition operational structure. Like this transition number, page 13, transitional operational structure, something like that. And I'm going to get into the new organizational structure, but one of the things I want to emphasize to you is that as we do this, the most important thing for us to do is to make sure that we continue providing services. So as we get to the new organization, it's going to be kind of a metamorphosis from the old organization to the new. And there's a transitional piece here that I just wanted to share with you that we've thought through as we get to the new structure. And this organizational chart is just about our field offices, and we are going to continue to have the five independently managed field structures below Bill Fink. So we need to transition that way while we get to the different phases. So I wanted to share that with you, that we haven't forgotten about our clients. Our clients come first, and as we transition, we're going to try to assure that we don't miss a beat. And as you can see, the thing that's different about this from the current organization, right in the middle of this, you see SDA, which stands for Service Delivery Area Cohort Managers, and we'll be hiring those folks this summer, and they'll be putting together information about each of those phase one, phase two, and phase three counties, how we're going to move into those. And so the planning for the new organization is taking place while at the same time we're still operating. So that's all I wanted to say about that. So we're thinking about transition. And then I would very quickly like to go to the next page.
Representative Schrader.
So the SDA cohort is basically your planning, temporary planning arm to make sure this continues to work.
No, those are the folks who will be our leaders in our counties in the future. So we're starting to get them on board, and they're starting to plan the transition of the staff that are in those other boxes that you see there for each county.
Follow up.
And then, but in the end, all these separate boxes at the bottom will be folded into one.
That's right, Madam Chair and Representative Schrader. And we're going to demonstrate that to you on page 14, what it'll look like after we get through the transition. Page 14, then, remember, we have five different field structures as we talk today, and we're going to get to where we have one, and this will be the central office and the field office structure. This is a high-level view. This is the 10,000-foot view of this structure. And this is the way it looks. So no longer do we have an AFS, an SDSD, and an SCF, and a VR lines the way we did the previous one. We have SDA managers, and then all the field staff are under them, right here in the middle of that graph on page 14. Now, I'm going to get into what the detail of that looks like in the next graph, but I wanted to show you how these SDA managers are going to be supported. There's going to be a quality control unit, and that's where we do quality control around errors and food stamps, make sure we do food stamp processing correctly, and make sure that we process these eligibility things that the federal government holds us accountable for, that we do that properly. So it's a quality control unit. We have one of those now. We have actually a couple of those now. They're coming into one place to serve us. The item you see on the left that says OHP Processing Center, that's where all the Oregon Health Plan applications are processed. We have one place for that now. That's out on Cherry Avenue in Salem. We have a group of several hundred people working on nothing but processing that, and that will be part of our field structure because that's a field-like operation. But just to tell you what that is, but that isn't going to be in our communities. Those applications still come here for processing because we can get them done quickly. Now, in addition, the two most important parts of this chart are the SDA managers and that below them, and that shows you that we've collapsed the five field structures into one. The other important part is the place in this diagram where you see the dotted circle around that. And what's critical about that in this organization is, in this organization, we've separated field from program. Right now, SCF has the program office and the field structure, same with AFS and SDSD. So when you separate field from those policy areas, it's critical that you have them linked in an accountability sense. And so that you're translating policy into action, you're evaluating the action, and then translating it back into policy to improve your policy. These folks in this circled, dotted circle here, the policy to practice team, are taking the policy information from our policy groups in central office and translating that into action for our SCA managers. And they're assuring that the policy that comes from the central office, in fact, gets into the action plan and the practice that we have in the field. These are very important people in that connection. And one of the things, I don't know if you listened to the public hearing the other night in the House committee, they had a public hearing. One of the things that people were wondering about is how do we make that connection between a separated field and a policy? And this is one way. This is one mechanism. And there's another one I'll talk about in just a minute. But it's real important that within the field operation structure, we have that policy and practice team. And so you see we'll have specialists around the different policy areas that will be advising the field operations manager and directing the SDA managers around policy and practice. Remember that one of the principles in this reorganization is that the folks working in the field keep their specialties. So if there's a child protective services worker, we're not asking that person to be a generalist. Or if there's a VOC counselor, we're not asking that person to be a specialist. We're asking them to practice their specialties in teams. This group here, Policy to Practice, assures that they keep their expertise in their specialty, that they're up to date in the current policy required by the federal government and our policy offices in Salem, and whatever you require of us as a legislature policy. They assure that those specialists are up to date, and that's part of the policy practice. So that's one of the connections we're going to have between the central office policy teams in the field, right there. I'm going to move to the next page.
What do all the administrative assistants do? It seems like there's quite a number of them.
Administrative. So how many do we have on this page here?
Three.
Administrative assistants are people that, like I have Collier McCoy in my office, who does a lot of the administrative work, photocopying, scheduling, managing the office, making sure that invoices are paid, those kinds of things. And what we're trying to do is take the administrative business type work that's more routine off of the plate of the more professional folks so they have more time to do the professional duties. So that's what the administrative assistants do. Now, by the way, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
What's your management analyst in? What's that function?
The management analyst, and by the way, Madam Chair and members of the committee, behind this, there's a job description for each one of these boxes in here, so you get the detail. But the management analyst will be the person working in the field operations area that will go out and try to solve management issues as they come up. I mean, I would foresee if we had another, God forbid, another dumpster thing, that a management analyst would be on that right away and trying to figure out what went wrong and making recommendations. I think one of the weaknesses we have in the Department of Human Services right now is that we don't have a cadre of those kinds of people helping. And I'm building one of those now to help me as director that can go out and do the kind of work that we need when we have a management problem and do an analysis and make recommendations. So the management analysts would do that type of work, Madam Chair.
Representative Senator Duncan.
I'm just curious, Madam Chair and Robbie. I know you're appearing before many legislative committees now and so forth about the restructuring and so forth. And I think the big policy question is a legitimate legislative kind of a question. I don't have a problem with that. The thing I hope that we don't do, and I hope other subcommittee committees and so forth aren't getting involved, I don't want to see us in the business of micromanaging, telling you how to organize within the structure. I think the big policy kinds of things on the question, and the concept you're trying to do is, that's a legislative kind of a concern. I buy into that. But I really hope that the legislature isn't trying to micromanage you, because I frankly feel that you should be held accountable. I mean, that's our micromanaging. When things aren't working out there, then I think we ought to trample your budget and do everything we can to get rid of you. That's where it goes. And so I'm hoping that you're not having that kind of problem within the legislative assembly.
Madam Chair and Senator Duncan, I appreciate those comments. And the reason I'm giving you this level of detail is to demonstrate to you that I've given a great deal of thought about how this needs to be organized, and so that we do keep the trains running and we have a good system.
Madam Chair, and I appreciate that. But as I listen to it, I keep thinking, well, that's his ball game, and he's got to make it work. And
One of the questions. I'm sorry.
Maybe I should help put some of this in perspective. There's been a lot of questions both in the field.
Oh, I understand.
I know that the director is trying to make sure that he's conveying the message that that the existing services will go forward while he brings in the new model, and of course, and I appreciate the work that they're doing to make sure that everybody understands how this is going to evolve.
No, Madam Chair, and I understand that, and I'm appreciative of it, but I just want to be, it's easy for the Legislative Assembly to want to say, well, let's move this box. I don't want to mess with your boxes. That's why you get paid. You get paid a little lot more than I did.
He's a lot better than you are.
I know. Well, he's younger than you are, too.
Madam Chair and Senator Duncan, I don't think I'm that much younger either. Right? And the per hour rate for both of us isn't very good.
I know.
And Madam Chairman, and Bobby, if you find you can't do the job, let us know, and we'll see if Magic Johnson's available.
Yeah. Oh, wow. This morning has been one of those mornings.
Madam Chair, I would say, though, I think one of the policy decisions you need to make as a legislature, as this goes forward, is how much of this structure you're going to put in statute. You got to make that decision, and the chair and I have talked about how much of this needs to be in statute, the organization. One of the things I worry about is that we get too much detail into statute, and it really does reduce your flexibility as a legislature, as a governor, as a director. And I stand ready to be accountable for this, and that's why I'm here. And I'll take the accountability, and I know the governor will tell me when I'm not doing the job.
Senator Duncan.
Are we talking about putting this sort of, what are we talking
no,
about?
No, the Substance Committee is dealing with the bill, with legislation to pass out the legislation in order to get it to us. And hopefully they'll get their work done so that we can begin to look at it. But the question, and I think Bobby's had it and others have had it, we don't know yet how much should be put into statute and how much should not.
Darn that.
And so we're kind of grappling with that. And one of my recommendations is to actually to do, and Bobby and I have talked about this, perhaps having an oversight group as this evolves.
Yeah.
So that the legislators stay connected While they're going through the evolution, you have such issues as the technology issue that's involved in this. You have, there's just a whole host of when you're unbundling and rebuilding. I think it's probably the best way to describe what they're doing. And I think from the mission standpoint that we're all really supportive of what the department wants to achieve.
And those are the kinds of things, Madam Chair, I think we ought to be involved in, the mission kind of thing.
We just want to
start putting structure and stuff within statute, you know, no.
I would agree with you, but I think that Bobby recognizes that some of our members in the process are going to ask questions and that the questions need to be answered or we're not going to get this legislation down to us.
Now, Madam Chair, I'll continue on page 15. I want to get into what these service delivery areas will look like, but just let me say, too, is that actually you folks are seeing this before the Substance Committee is seeing it. I don't have a hearing scheduled yet on this information, and I hope I do that pretty soon, but you're kind of out in front of the curve on this a little bit, and this is just new to our website, so even our staff are catching up with this. We've been working furiously on this stuff, as you know, And when I finish here today, I'm going to go talk to our local government advisory committee about this. So I've got a full day about this information. On page 15 and over on page 16 and 17, what we have is an example of what the service delivery areas will look like. And these are, if you can see up in the upper left-hand corner, if you have this horizontally in page 15, it says model for small size service delivery area. Well, as we all know, Oregon is a very unique place in that it's got some high desert areas and some central Oregon areas and southern Oregon, and the population density is different. The geographic differences are distances are different. And so what we tried to do is determine a model for three different sizes of operation. And the first one before you here on page 15 is one if it was a smaller service delivery area. Now, a service delivery area will be one or more county areas. And if we're going to have one county as a service delivery area, it won't fit this criterion probably. It's small. It'll probably be large. But in a small size service delivery area, there'll be two or more counties, I would suspect. And those service delivery areas aren't decided yet. That's one of the things I told you before that I promised the Association of Oregon Counties I would sit down and work with them on, because they have traditional county relationships that they'd like to preserve or not preserve, whatever may be the case, and they just want to advise me on that. Now, they know it's going to be advisory to me, and that we get to decide that, I get to decide that with your consultation. But this one right here would be a typical one for an Eastern Oregon service delivery area. Say if we combined Baker and Union and Wallawa, it would probably be this kind of configuration where we'd have less than 250 staff. Now, on the right-hand side, you can see FTE listed. And you get down to that bottom box where it says direct service delivery staff, there would be less than 250 in this model. Now, in that box that says direct service delivery staff, that will include our child protective services workers. It would include our VR counselors. Would include our seniors workers. It would include our AFS, self-sufficiency, welfare to work workers, and the like. That does not, this FTE count does not include the county mental health, the county DD workers, the county public health workers. So this is just our staff. That's all this is. It's not the county staff.
Or AAA.
And we don't have AAAs in all counties.
We don't. That's right, Madam Chair. And then right above those 250 or less staff, we're going to have, depending on how many staff there are, there'll be 10 to 20 supervisors. One of the things I said from the get-go about a principle is that no staff that deliver services will be changed. They're going to keep their specialties. They'll be working in teams, but we're not going to reduce the number of staff. We're not going to change their specialties, nor are we going to reduce the number of expert supervisors they have. So those supervisory ratios that you budget for me right now will initially stay the same for the number of supervisors we have here. So right above that less than 250, you see three boxes here, child welfare line supervisors, children and family Children, Family, Adults Program Line Supervisors, Senior Disability and Program Line Supervisors. That's where the specialty supervisors will be, and there will be 10 to 20 of them, depending on the size of the SDA. Now, you're probably saying, where's Voc Rehab in there? Well, the Voc Rehab supervisor will be in that box that I'm calling Senior and Disabled Program Line Supervisor. The Child Protective Services one would be over here where it says Child Welfare Program Line Supervisor and the like. And then one of the things that we have to have in these service delivery areas are people that are completely focused on the program, that work with those people that were in the dotted circle in the central office to assure that we get the program right. And that's what the next level is. The 6 FTE up here, you can see Child Welfare Program Manager, Self-Sufficiency Program Manager, Senior Disabled Program Manager, and so on. Those folks who are assuring that we have the program expertise at that SDA, they're advising our supervisors and advising our staff on critical cases, cases that aren't easy. There are lots of cases that aren't easy, aren't straightforward, that people need advice on, and they're there to help with that. In addition, every SDA is going to have somebody coordinating our data technology. We're going to have somebody working on community-developed coordination with county mental health, county DD, the public health system, and we're going to have some business people. So that's the way a small one looks. Now on the next page, on page 16, this is for a medium one, and it looks the same, except the numbers of FTE are the same, and there's one additional level in here. And I'll get to that in a second. But here you can see, we think a medium-sized one will have up to 350 staff. There will be 20 to 30 supervisors. We'll still have the 6 FTE that we had in the smaller one that are the program experts. But because we're getting larger, we're putting in another program manager above those folks to give them more support. The more staff you have, the more harder cases you're going to have, the more support you're going to have, the more coordination you're going to have. So we've added another program manager. Now, having said all of that about that extra program manager, remember, we're still, we haven't implemented this yet. And over time, in the first year or so, we may find out that we don't need that one in a medium SDA, or we may need more than that. So we'll be back to you with an oversight group about how this works out. This is what we think we're going to need right now for a medium-sized SDA. On page 17 is a large-size SDA.
Senator, you?
I don't have the packet with me. I think I left it in my office. Oh. Do you have another packet I can have?
We need one for Representative Bates, too.
If you change your schedule, we can't function.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. I mean, you know.
It's all right.
We don't usually meet on Fridays, and then we just can't function. I'm sorry.
So if you could have gotten Kelly, she'd have had his notes, too. It would have been pretty good.
You have got the truth out.
Yeah, that's right.
I never have the truth.
He has opinions.
Thanks.
In this one, you can see that we're getting up to 450 case-carrying people in this region. We're getting to be pretty complex. We're up to 30 to 40 supervisors. We've added an extra program person. And then you can see we have 2 SCA program managers, too. And so it's basically the same design. We're adding more staff to them, and then we're adding more management oversight as we go. Same kind of design. And there will be either one or more counties. Now, in this one, this large SDA could be a Lane County, could be a Marion County. Now, you're probably asking yourself, and I would if I were you, well, Multnomah County has more than 450 staff. It does. It has probably 3 times that many case-carrying people. And Multnomah County is still under design, and we'll have that in the next couple of weeks. But I think that it will be something like this multiplied by 3. But we're still looking at that, about how that will work.
What is the rationale for having the 1-to-10 ratio of administration to staff?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair and
And supervisors to field people in every model.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They have one supervisor for every 10 staff. It seems a little high.
Too many staff or too many supervisors?
Too many supervisors.
Too many supervisors. Well, this is...
The policy team up at the top, it would seem that they pretty well line out how things are supposed to happen, and then just goes down the chain of command. It just seems like you wouldn't need quite that many.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Schrader, that's an average. And in some areas, there's more staffed supervisors. So as an example, in food stamp eligibility, there wouldn't be nearly as many supervisors. But you get into some child protective services, there will be more supervisors for fewer staff. And so this is an average. These are based upon the current standards that we have today that were budgeted today that you have approved over the years. And I can't tell you specifically what the supervisory ratios are, but I do know that in child protective services, you're going to have fewer numbers of case managers working with a supervisor than you are, say, in food stamp eligibility or one of the more routine tasks.
It's my understanding, this is current, but it's my understanding that your new model will be something where about 1 to 15?
Well,
I missed that someplace.
No. Madam Chair, what this is I made the premise as we transition to this new organization that we're not going to change any of our case managers or their expert supervisors. Where the efficiencies come in are the managers above that. And we've eliminated 50 managers above the supervisory level in this structure. I do not want to get into a situation as we're transitioning to a new organization of cutting supervision short. Now, it may be that as we get into this experientially over the first year or so that we may not need as many supervisors, but at least from the get-go, I think we need to keep where we are. And this reflects our current staffing to supervisor ratios that's in our budget now, and it's just transferred to a new structure. But it's average, Representative Schrader.
Well, I guess I would think I'm not sure I quite concur that that's where we should end up. I mean, with the new model, one of the things that I saw was that since we're going to be doing the team approach, that rather than have a separate manager for SCF person, AFS person, SDSD person, we have a manager or two managers for the team. And I think as a policy issue for me, as a legislator, I would assume that we would be able to have huge efficiencies in terms of the supervisors, even down at the model level here for the SDAs that you're proposing.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Schrader, let me talk about that just for a minute. I think that one of the things we could have done differently in this chart probably is to show you that these supervisors will be working in teams as well. But I just don't think that we can take, and I'm going to use Child Protective Services as an example. I don't think we can change those supervisory ratios until we're further into this model and look and see what our experience is. It's too critical. I think it's important as we transition that we keep those supervisory ratios. Now, I'm going to keep open the number that we may need in the future, but I don't know how we, I'm not comfortable in risking not having proper supervision for these specialists.
Madam Chair?
Senator Duncan.
I'm wondering, and I'll ask you this, Madam Chair, I'll ask you this question, Bobby. As we talk about supervisors, it's kind of like the old question I ask oftentimes, what's administration and what's operations? And I think that sometimes there's the feeling, you talk about supervisor, you have somebody walking around kind of supervising everybody. And my guess is that your supervisors also carry a workload. I mean, I'm talking about they get involved in cases. It's not just supervising 10 people. They have the supervision responsibilities, but they also have probably a pretty responsible workload. Is that not the case, or how you...
Madam Chair and Senator Duncan, that is the case in some of the areas, not all of them, but it is in some of them. But all of these supervisors not only have the hiring and the accountability issues with employees, the disciplinary issues, things that supervisors do in state government, all that paperwork associated with being a supervisor, these folks are clinical supervisors as well, about meeting the child welfare or the senior or the elder worker standards. And so they've got that piece. And then many of them do carry specialty cases themselves. They do have a workload that goes with them. But I do think that this is a question that should be open as we get into this. It may be different as we get down the road. I'm not comfortable doing that right now.
Representative Schrader.
And I'm very sensitive to Senator Duncan's concerns, and his points earlier were excellent about micromanaging, but I think this is an important conversation to have at some point, probably not us from a eventually from a budgeting standpoint, but I don't want the agency to go off with this particular thing without the legislative or the governor's ultimate buy-in on this whole thing, and what is the best for the people out there to get the services. And we would have to make, I think, at some point some judgment call about do we need more field workers or do we need more field supervisors?
Yeah.
And, you need both, very obviously. So I guess that's the reason I raised the question more than anything else. There's and I look at the mental health division, for instance. If you look at the Developmental Disabilities Administration versus field staff, there's, over the last 5 years, it's gone up 180%. That's quite a little bit. That's quite a little bit more than what the FTE ratio is. And if you look at the ratio of administrators to field personnel, it's doubled in 6 years. And I wonder if that's the best use of our limited resources. I think about these things. And
on that particular one, Madam Chair and Representative Schrader, remember the DD case carrying staff are county staff, except for a small number of staff that we have carrying cases. So that central DD office is also coordinating activities of the county staff that you're not going to see on our charts.
Just one comment, and I'll stop.
Yeah, I want to move us before we don't get through this budget again, and we're going to have the same problem of having to stay this evening.
And I will stop. I'm done. Trader, you're out of here. I love this plan, Bob.
I'm satisfied right
now. You're satisfied right now.
I just hate to see you stand by yourself this evening.
Continue, Bobby.
So this is a large one. You're going to get one on Multnomah County in the next couple of weeks. But the other thing I'd point out that's in common with all of these organizational charts over the last couple of pages, if you look right in the middle of the page, you see dotted lines going out from the SDA manager to community partners and review committee and community advocates. One of the things that's really important in our work that's evolved over the last several years is this connection with our community partners. And when I tell you that 950,000 Oregonians are served in our system, I'm also including county mental health, county public health, the DD system, and the AAAs. And so it's real important as we design this and put it together that we are connected with our community partners who are also serving the same people we serve as a state government. And so part of the SDA's manager, I just want to point this out to you, in every area we'll be connecting with those other service providers and connecting with the advocates in the community, really staying connected with them and having some oversight from the advocates. So that's integral to our job. Now, I'm not going to go through all these other pages that gives you a brief position description of everything I had there. I went through real quickly what the positions were. I don't want to go through that, but the details there, if you'd like to get into it. Now I want to turn to my next handout. I'm sorry about that Douglas fir that's no longer standing today as we go.
While you're doing the handout, Senator Yee had a question. She wasn't here with the dumpster. So she has a question on some of the comments in your communication to us.
Yes.
Yes,
Senator Yee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very concerned after reading your report regarding what happened. This happened 4 years ago.
Yes.
And several times citizens complained about this. Information, and there was one that was arrested because she went through the dumpster, and still you are getting this out. I don't understand how can this happen for 4 years, and even when one was arrested, because this is illegal, and this still happened as recent as in April.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Yee, that report, as I said in my cover letter, surprised me because I didn't know what was going on that long either. The first report I had back was that it was an incident, and then I find out not only had this been ongoing for 4 years off and on again, but also that our staff were more involved than I thought they were.
Yeah,
So those are two things that surprised me. The comment about the lady in there that said she was arrested, the way I read that was that in her experience previous to coming to the to our training, that she had been arrested going through a dumpster, not as a result of our training, but that's neither here nor there, really, because it sounds like it's an illegal activity. So I'm very concerned by it. What that report shows is that we discovered that this was in our materials as a result of a complaint. One worker made proactive work or proactive decisions to take it out, but failed to communicate to others. That's a weakness. Mm-hmm. And then when we decided once again to take it out, somebody forgot to go through all our training materials to make sure it was taken out. So it kept coming back over a period of 4 years, which shows that there were a couple of things wrong here. First of all, we had bad judgment, terrible judgment around that. We weren't sensitive to our clients in that respect. And then the second thing is we didn't use good management follow-through when we discovered the problem. Those are things that are wrong. And the thing I tried to convey to you is that I want to use this as a learning experience, not only for AFS and Eugene, but AFS statewide and also our other divisions statewide. And so this is a topic on our cabinet discussion next Monday. I'm going to talk to our administrators about this. What can we learn from it? I want them to use this in staffing so that they can talk about how to respect our clients, how to be sensitive to our clients, learn from the mistakes we made so it doesn't happen again. And in my weekly message that just went out this morning, I have a weekly message I send to all employees. I discussed this in my weekly message about the importance of respect and dignity and sensitivity to our clients. And so we're going to try to learn from it. The other thing, Madam Chair and Senator Yee, is that I've asked our human resources manager, the person that's in charge of our personnel system, to advise me on what corrective action needs to be taken with these employees, whether it's training, whether it's discipline, what it will be. And I've also asked Cindy Becker, whom you met last time she was with me, to advise me what actions we should take against this contractor, whether or not that was a breach of contract, whether or not there are other things we need to do with the contractor. So we're taking corrective action. But let me tell you, quite frankly, my experience in government for 20 years, and I know a little bit about state personnel law. I'm certainly not an expert. State personnel law, human resources law, and the court cases is that I don't think there will be discipline of our employees in this case. I think there will be training. I think there may be a letter of instruction to them. But I think, I'm just anticipating what my human resources manager is going to tell me. I think he's going to tell me under state law that this isn't a disciplinary item. So I just want to warn you about that up front. I think that's what's going to happen.
But this is very serious. This is completely opposite to your mission of helping them to be safe and healthy.
That's right.
And that the client was arrested shows that this is illegal action. So this is not just a business as usual situation. So when is your human resource manager going to recommend corrective action?
Well, that will be early next week, I believe, Madam Chair and Senator Yee.
Next week, when?
Early next week. One of the things that our human resources manager is doing is talking with the labor relations people at the Attorney General's office. So whenever that connection's made.
Will you send us a written memo?
I intend to do that, Madam Chair and Senator Yee.
This action is, and what Cindy Becker's report identifying possible contractual violations.
Senator Yee, Bobby has assured us that he will keep us in the loop on information related to this issue, and I'm trusting that he's going to do that. So far he's given us what we've asked, and he has to go through this process. It's a process that we insist that managers must do. Sure. So he's going through the formal process in order to get what we need. And I said earlier that if we don't get this completed, we're going to be here till 7 o'clock tonight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he'll get it for us.
He will give it to us.
I will.
But he can't be sharing person.
No, he can't.
He cannot be sharing personal information with us.
I don't want that.
That's
between you and your staff.
With that, Chair, I can, Senator Duncan, I can give you generally what the situation
is. This has gone on too long.
This next handout, what I want to talk to you about are the things that we need to do to prepare to transition the organization to the new organization. And in this handout on page one, there are six bullets there, and I just want to talk about those six bullets briefly for you. And the rest of this handout gets into more detail about each of those bullets. And then there's an appendix in the back that gives you an implementation matrix with target dates in it. And so everything I'm going to talk about is in detail in here. This is only for the field structure. I've got another implementation matrix that will be completed very shortly about the whole central office structure. So you're going to see everything that I think we have to do with dates on it, and I think we've been very planful and hardworking about this, and I just like to go through it with you very briefly. The six bullets on page one, making personnel decisions. Now that is hiring. First of all, we got to decide on what the SDAs will look like, and then I need to hire people who are going to run those for us. So those personnel decisions need to be made, and then we have to figure out where those 50 positions from the middle management will be taken out, where we're not going to fill them from the management pool. Then who fills the remaining management positions, and where they will be, and the like. So those are the kinds of personnel decisions we have to make. And in addition to that, we got to figure out what team staff will be in, and we have to figure out in each city how we're going to mix our staff up. Now, one of the things I said from the very beginning is that we want to get to a place where we can have multi-service centers in every community of this state. But right now, we're operating under a condition where we have existing leases in our communities. And we have leases for AFS, we have leases for SCF, we have leases for SDSD and VR. Sometimes those leases are all in one building, sometimes they're in multiple buildings, as they are in Salem. And just one example, out on Silverton Road, near the fairgrounds, we have an SCF office there, a large SCF office. On Mission Street, we have over here on the other part of town, we have an AFS office. We have a couple of VR offices, one on Liberty, one on Lancaster. And so one of the things that we're going to do is have a plan on how we can take some SCS staff from Silverton, put them on Mission Street, put them on Liberty and Lancaster, how we can take some AFS staff from Mission and put them in the other locations and so forth. So we got to go through those personnel decisions as well, too. Who we're going to try to make some decisions on how teams fit together, those kinds of decisions. That's encompassed in that first bullet. Then the second bullet says providing training for employees. And that's a big thing. Now, people, I think, are well trained in their specialties, but some of our staff don't do a very good job of working in teams. They're clinicians who believe the case is theirs, no. They don't want to share it.
We don't either.
The kettle calling the pot
black.
What's that color?
That was silence.
That was good to hear that.
I did, Madam Chair and Representative Bates, I didn't want to mention anything about a medical model here, but I. but we're going to have to get people to work in teams, and it's going to take some training about how to share responsibility, how to give up, how to work in teams, how to facilitate. So we're going to be doing that. We also have a huge training opportunity here for our managers. And I'd like to say it's going to be training, but in fact, it's going to be more indoctrination. I'm going to indoctrinate people on an accountable way of doing business around this vision that we have. And accountability is going to be the byword in this organization. We're going to be more accountable than we have in the past. We're going to hold our people accountable. We don't do a good enough job of that right now when things happen. We need to correct them. And by accountability, I don't mean you fire somebody every time they make a mistake, but you do coach them. You do put things in their file to bring them along, and we don't do that very well. We're going to do some more training for our managers around that, but I'm going to indoctrinate those folks that we hire as managers about how we're going to do business in the future in this department. The third bullet is making needed changes in information systems and other technologies. Now, when you get into the detail, this is not fully fleshed out in the backup material, but let me talk about that for a few minutes in information technology. I'm getting close to Representative Patridge's, he likes this stuff.
Not as much as Senator Duncan.
And Senator Duncan, too. But in information technology, just let me say about that, you all know who have served on any committee dealing with our information technology, that we have systems that were built in the 70s and 80s that were built in COBOL. They're old, they're huge. We run payment systems. That's why most of them are created with payment systems. And information management information was a second thought for many of them. They were built a long time ago. They were built when federal money became available for a single purpose, so they were built in silos. They don't talk with one another. They were built with different data definitions, and by that I mean is that some may say first name, last name. Others may say last name, first name in the name field, or the dates of birth are different. And so getting those things together is not that easy. We're not going to rewrite all those systems.
Senator Hartung, the 70s seems like yesterday.
I'll let that play.
And we're not going to rewrite those things anytime soon. We're going to take them as we have some opportunities around federal funding like MMIS. But the other things that interact with MMIS are going to be there for a while. So the challenge is then, how can we take those silos that were built for independent purposes and make them available for all our case managers? And so what this is about are the things that we can do immediately, and here are the things we can do immediately. Right now, what we can do immediately is turn the switch on so all the case managers can have access to everything. Right now, we have data access managers in each of our divisions that if you're not an SCF employee, don't you know you're not going to get on, you're not going to get the switch turned on for SCF information if you work somewhere else. Same thing for AFS and our other divisions. So if you're working in a team, we want the switch turned on for everybody in the team. Hank Collins at the public meeting the other day, he's the manager in Jackson County, human services manager for Jackson County, and he is talking about out in White City, when we first put this together in White City, we had terminals in different part of the White City facility that was available for different things. So if you wanted to know information about a client that was on three different systems, you ran to one computer terminal, wrote something down, then you ran to another part of the building, to another terminal, and wrote something down. Well, we've got a way to get around that now. It's called MetaFrame, and we've got it in Jackson County. And what this is a software product that we overlay all our systems that allows us to make our computer screens look more like a window screen, and each one of our systems is an icon. And you can click on an icon, and you can open up all the screens on one screen rather than running all over the building. Now, that's not perfect. But I got to tell you, that's worlds away from where we are in most parts of the state right now. And so we're going to do that. The other thing I want to say about information systems is when you start working in teams and you're sharing information with clients with multiple needs, the need for these information systems for an ongoing management, case management thing, are diminished, because you're working closely together. And particularly, the other part of information systems we're going to do is we're going to take a piece of either the AFS system or the senior system, which has a case narrative component to it, so that we can do charting just the way docs do in the hospitals, and you can do charting of the patient. We can do charting of our clients across disciplines. If everybody uses the same case management narrative, we're going to make that available. We're going to make a decision which one that's going to be. That's going to be available to everybody. Now, those are the immediate things we can do this summer, and I think those are huge, and that's what we intend to do there. Implement reorganization of the local level, and actually I touched on a bunch of that stuff, getting the managers in place, getting the supervisors in place, figuring out what teams the people are going to go on, what buildings are going to be in every community.
I think Senator Shield is getting ready to leave us, and he's been the quietest this morning. I mean, that whole chronologically advantaged group down there, you know.
I'm sorry.
You're not done yet?
I'm about done.
You're basically quiet.
I was just wondering if the sealant that we dealt with in the dental application had an effect.
I'm just trying to set myself apart from the chronological advantage.
I see.
The last two bullets, and I'm not going to go through every page of this. I'm just giving you an overview, and you got the detail. The last two bullets, establish policy to practice. I've already talked about that, and so the importance of that and what we're going to do with that. And then evaluating the new service delivery model. Here's the deal. This is important. This is critical. Is that before we kick in the new model in every county, we're going to take a benchmark, a reading of where we are and all the policy measures that you've given us and that we've given ourselves and that you look at. We're going to do a reading this summer before we kick this in. And then we're going to have an ongoing mechanism to measure that, and that's going to be management information to our managers and to you about how we're doing on those. And we're going to have in place a way to be able to measure those over time. And we're going to be doing an annual report on how we're doing those performance measures by branch. So that's part of the evaluation there, and that's critical. The other part of the evaluation I want to tell you about is that as we're starting to work in teams, and we're starting to view the client as a whole person and a whole family rather than just a slice the way we do now across our divisions, is that I think that we need to relook at those performance measures and see if there's new ones that we ought to be looking at. And we're in the process of doing that right now. And sometime this summer, we're going to be suggesting some performance measures in addition to the one you're already looking at about what we should be looking at. And so that's it.
Thank you. You finished on time. I want to thank the chronologically robust group this morning who was somewhat rowdy. You know, they're feeling...
they're out of control.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Have a good weekend, and I will see everyone on Monday morning, bright and early, 8 a.m. Yes, we recess at 9 for the announcement on the revenue forecast. So enjoy, and we are adjourned.